is 10:02, March.
Good morning. It is 10:02, March 29th, 2023. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Public Service Commission. I call this meeting to order. I am joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugenhoffert and Julie Fedorchek, so we have a quorum. A lot of things going on in the legislature, but not anything particular that I think needs to be brought up. And we held the second of the four hearings on Summit Pipeline yesterday. And I really don't have any other opening comments. Commissioner Haugenhoffert, do you?
Yes, good morning, everyone, on this cool day. I'm looking so forward to spring. But I just want to just reference some training I went to last week on cybersecurity training. It was a very well-developed cybersecurity training, a lot of interaction. And I'm pleased to also indicate that I will be serving on a NARUC DOE cybersecurity work group on doing guidelines for companies and distribution, electrical. So I look forward to working on that group, learning a lot, and representing North Dakota.
Very good. Thank you for doing that. Commissioner Fedorchek.
Thank you, Randy. Sherry, that's great news. Really glad to see you digging into the cybersecurity stuff. I also want to compliment you on your beautiful gnome.
Yeah, I think it's...
We frame Randy very well now with our two UND gnomes.
Thanks for noticing, Julie. I appreciate it.
And then I also have just a couple comments I want to make on a separate subject. So the three of us each independently met a couple weeks ago with one of the assistant secretaries of the EPA or assistant directors. He's a nominee to lead one of the important divisions. Joe Goffman, and as part of his Senate hearing, Senator Kramer asked him if he had met with us and the Industrial Commission folks, and he said no. And so Senator Kramer said, well, you told me you would, so now I expect you to do that. So he did. And it was really great because it gave us an opportunity, each of us, to talk to him about things that are important to North Dakota, and two of those things that I talked to him about, and I'm sure my colleagues also referenced some of these things as well, are their rules, their potential rules impacting the nation's coal generation fleet. They have two significant new rules that, well, new and existing rules that they're taking on that could have a significant impact. One of them is the ozone transport rule, the next phase of that. And the data that I have is that that could impact nearly 50,000 megawatts of this nation's coal fleet by 2026. And this is, 50 gigawatts of coal generation. This is in addition to existing generation that's already scheduled for retirement. And then on top of that, the rule could jeopardize another 20,000 megawatts of gas-fired power plants. And then, so that's just the ozone transport rule. The coal combustion residuals rule, another one that impacts a lot of facilities nationwide, including one in North Dakota, that could impact another 40,000 megawatts of dispatchable thermal power coal throughout the country. And so in total, that's 110,000 megawatts of power that could be impacted by these new EPA rules, and in a very short timeline, much quicker than what is needed to bring on replacement power to fill that gap. And to put it in perspective, I had been sharing this with somebody in our staff, and they said, well, what does that mean, 110,000 megawatts of power or 110 gigawatts? So to put it in perspective, that's equivalent to, it's more than what the entire MISO peak demand was during Storm Elliott, which was 100 and 7 gigawatts, and Storm Uri, which was 103 gigawatts. That's for the entire 15-state MISO footprint. So you're looking at shutting down through rules at the EPA 110 gigawatts of power, equivalent to some of the peak load in all of MISO. That's just an enormous amount of power. It jeopardizes significantly the reliability in the nation's power sector, and just really need to have the public aware of this and all hands on deck to urge the EPA to have some reasonableness in the way in which they implement these rules so as not to further exacerbate the already significant capacity shortages that we're seeing in our state's electricity fleet as we go through this significant transition from our thermal dispatchable resources to the more intermittent renewable resources nationwide. So I just wanted to highlight that. That's something that the commission here is, you know, really, I know my colleagues are concerned about this. I'm concerned about it. I'm working hard on this in MISO, where it is, I think, more of an urgent issue than in SPP. They haven't been quite as quick to retire those fleets in SPP, but certainly a growing issue that we all need to be aware about.
That is a really good point, and with all the legislative activity, I kind of forgot about that. And as you had mentioned, also visited with Mr. Goffman. And so SPP is having a lot of retirements. That transport rule doesn't affect SPP nearly as much. Some of our states, like North Dakota, aren't impacted by it. So it's not quite as dire, although the sharing agreements that in certain hours of URI, SPP was bailed out by MISO imports, and MISO was able to do that because of their imports from PJM, and you know, that would be very much that would be going away by this. But what I understand, I so admire and appreciate Senator Cramer for really forcing Mr. Goffman into that. But at the same time, I came away from a half-hour visit with him feeling totally unconvinced that he is at all interested in listening to us or caring about the situation.
Well, I was more optimistic than you, and he did pledge to work with, I pushed the NARUC side of things, and he did pledge to work with NARUC leadership and members throughout this process, so I appreciated that. But the day after, or 2 days after our conversation, they came out with their proposal for the ozone transport rule, which showed a slight backing off on the timeline, but not much of the backing off on the requirements. And then since then, I've we've seen drafts of the decision on Coal Creek Station, which is being threatened by the coal combustion residuals permitting and in need of an extension for using their existing facility for their disposal. And the EPA has announced that they intend to, their draft is to refuse that request, which could threaten Coal Creek Station. They'd have to shut down in order to rebuild a waste facility and replace the one that is already certified by the state and, as far as I'm able to understand, deemed safe by the state. But if they were shut down Coal Creek Station, that takes another 1,150 megawatts of power off in the MISO territory almost instantly. And that facility has been running at max gen during those two storms that threatened MISO North the most, the Storm Uri and Elliott. Coal Creek Station was running at full power. And it's so valuable as a capacity resource that MISO is actually giving it a higher than nameplate capacity rating for some of its seasons. It's that valuable. And so this is the immediate impact that some of these rulings have. And the EPA just simply must take these facts on the ground into consideration when they make their decisions, or they will be having significant consequences to citizens.
I would just like to add something. Randy, initially when my conversation started out with him, I felt like there was some resistance. And I talked about collaboration, working together. And they said, oh, we're willing to do that. And they talked about working with people, organizations like NARUC and all that. And I said, well, maybe you need to narrow it down into more smaller specific issues. And I ended with, you know, I think the best way that you can understand North Dakota, and I said, how many of you been to North Dakota? And two people raised their hand. And I said, I invite you to take it a step further instead of having just these calls. I appreciate them, and I appreciate Kevin Kramer for setting it up. But I said, I think it's time for you to have some boots on the ground and understand and meet with individual states and the impact, what we can bring to the table, but the decisions you're making are hindering that, and to really work with the states to understand. Open invitation, I think a couple people were like, oh, great, I've never been to North Dakota and stuff. So it would be interesting to see where it goes. I don't have high hope, but I think we all took a different approach in some ways and expanded it, but I think our goal was the same, as these are going to be some detrimental decisions that are going to impact us all. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, with that, we have 10 items on the consent calendar. I move approval of those plus the previous minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, I move the commission approve revision number 3-4 to surface coal mining permit NAFK-9503 held by Falkirk Mining Company for the Falkirk Mine to delete 9.4 acres in the southeast quarter of Section 7, Township 145 North, Range 82 West, McLean County, that have not been disturbed by mining activities in Falkirk Mining Company revision 3-4 permit NAFK-9503. Application case number RC-23-65.
Second.
So on February 3rd of this year, Falkirk filed the application to delete these 9.4 acres from the permit. Again, this has not been affected by any mining operations. This is in the southeast quarter of Section 7, Township 145, Range 82 in McLean County. Our reclamation staff inspected the acreage proposed for deletion on January 11th, again on the 25th, and then again on February 27th to verify that the property has not been disturbed by mining or reclamation-related activities. This revision application is considered a significant, but it requires PS... It's considered insignificant, but it requires PSC approval because of the acreage deletion. No monetary bond adjustment is necessary because of this revision. This does not contain any federal coal. That's not, I know we talk about a lot, sometimes them needing to go around something. That's not the issue here. It has to do with a carbon sequestration well pad for Midwest Ag Energy.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Dish Wireless LLC, designated eligible carrier, application case number PU-23-84.
Second.
On March 6th, Dish Wireless filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers. Dish proposes to provide wireless prepaid Lifeline Universal Services to qualifying low-income North Dakota customers by using a combination of its own facilities and reselling another carrier's facilities. The issues to be considered in this matter are whether the application is qualified, what universal service support area should be designated, and whether the designation of the applicant as an ETC is in the public interest. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by May 12th. If deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, Commissioner Haugenhofer, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. I move the Commission adopt the order in Northern States Power Company Customer Credit DOE Settlement 2021 application case number PU23-044.
Second.
On November 2nd, NSP filed a petition for approval to refund its customers for the 13th payment settlement. And on February 22nd, the Commission noticed a notice of opportunity for hearing until March 29th, and no comments were received. So this has become before us several times regarding payments from the DOE on a settlement agreement. Just to go back and recap a little bit, under the Nuclear Waste Policy Act of 1982, utilities were required to enter into contracts for the disposal of spent nuclear fuel. The DOE committed to transport and dispose of this nuclear fuel beginning no later than January 31st, 1998. However, the DOE did not accept any unspent nuclear fuel to date. So a lawsuit was filed, and then a settlement was reached. So on July 7th, 2011, NSP reached a settlement with the DOE, and then they received the first five payments. And then from January 24th through August 24th, 2022, there was an agreement to extend the 2000 settlement payments three times. And we received the 11th and 12th payment, and now we are on the 13th payment. And with that, there was some, when NSP received their payment, there was some delay on their part on giving this back to the customers. So the Commission worked with them and said, this needs to be more timely. And we entered into, there was another case in which we granted a 120-day authorization, and last year we worked with them again because it was some computer issues on doing timely payments. So that has all worked out, we believe. So this order is not only reflecting the 13th payment on how we're going to authorize it, but revoking some of our previous agreements. So I'm going to read what the order states to be very clear on what this 13th payment will allow and what we're revoking. Northern States Power proposal to issue the 13th DOE settlement payment as a line item refund on customer bill for 12 months is approved. The request for a 330-day extension of the timeline is enable the credit in which they were asking to be on their bill credit rider to be processed April 1st, 2023 through March 31st, 2024 is granted. Order provision 4 of the August 4th, 2021 order case number PU21-89 is revoked. NSP shall refund future DOE settlement proceeds back to the North Dakota customers using their bill credit rider as soon as practicable, beginning no later than 120 days from the receipt of the funds to the DO, from the DOE. NSP shall complete the refund over a 12-month period. In the final, within 30 days of the receipt of the settlement proceeds, NSP shall provide notification to the Commission detailing the amount and planned timing of the refund. A refund report must be filed with the Commission by NSP within 30 days from completion of future refunds. So I think after 13th payments, we got everything settled that NSP is going to, when they receive it, they're going to notify us, and then they're going to use their bill credit rider to refund it over a 12-month period. So with the extensive work with the staff, I support this approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Yes, there is. So, and great work from staff, because I think what you laid out will make this less of a nuisance for us in the future, and it's important that we process this and get this refund that NSP gets returned to the customers. That being said, in the bigger picture, this case every year just exemplifies what I don't know, it's probably the unparalleled stupidity of a lot of these government agencies, federal government agencies, that are creating the energy policies, the ones we talked about at the beginning, for example. So whether it's this, and I really compare it to, you know, companies proclaiming how they're going to be carbon free, but they don't build their facility and their own wind farm and disconnect from the grid. Oh no, they count on someone else to have carbon-based or nuclear-based energy to run them when the wind's not blowing or the sun's not shining. But they proclaim it, in that case, through the use of RECs. Here, 15, 20 years ago, when I was in the Senate, I was very active in the NCSL Energy and Environment Committee. And we were working hard on this long-term nuclear waste storage plan that the nation required. And I really felt, and I think everyone really felt, we were right on the verge. Yucca Mountain was like the most perfect geological place for this. They wanted it back then. Everything was just on the verge of finalizing this stuff. Here we are, 15 or 20 years later, and the nation is nowhere near as close to a long-term nuclear waste storage plan as we were back then, because that's been scrapped. We're not even seriously looking at any plan. Instead, like the phony renewable energy credits, rather than enforce their law, they just pay a penalty out to all the companies that have nuclear because they failed to meet their responsibility and come up with a storage facility. After this many double digits of years of paying the penalty, does anyone even really seriously think that they're working on a solution? No. They just print money and send it out. And that's the solution to our nuclear waste storage problem. Just write out checks to people. Absurd. But we're doing the right thing as far as what we can do by at least getting this money distributed back to the people who every day will take whatever risk is involved in having these temporary nuclear waste storage facilities scattered all over the country.
Sorry. Is there any further discussion?
How do you follow that? Good comments, but I wanted to really commend the staff. They worked hard on cleaning up this order so we know exactly where we're at with between DOE giving the payment to NSP and NSP's responsibility to give it back to the customers. So no further comment.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you. I move the Commission adopt the Order on Consent Agreement in Public Service Commission Shalom International Market, LLC, Weights and Measure Enforcement Case Number Waste Management 2367.
Second.
Thank you. So on September 22nd, our Weights and Measure Inspector conducted this inspection at Shalom Marketing in Minot. And during the inspection, the inspector noticed and identified that they were using a commercially scale which does not conform to state law and rules. The scale is not certified. It was not legal for trade sale. So the inspector put a tag on it, non-commercial device tag, and talked to them about why this scale is inappropriate with the employee, and the owner was also notified. So the inspectors went back on October 24th, 2022, and conducted a follow-up inspection and observed that they were actively using the scale, which is a violation of our Century Code. When questioned about the use of the non-compliant scale, the employee stated that the new scale has not arrived yet. So the inspector did his due diligence and spoke to the owner and informed both the owner and the employee that using this device is a violation of the state law and rules and must cease immediately. Follow up again, on November 9th, the inspector conducted an inspection of the new scale, and which does conform to the state laws and rules and is legal for trade. When the inspector tested the device, it determined it did not meet its tolerance as required. And it's new for the new machines to be tested, and there's a variance within that scale that needs to be met. So the inspector put a repair notice on the scale and authorized the company to use the scale for 60 days, but it had to be certified. And the owner wasn't available. However, there was good communication with the inspector, with the employee, to get this repaired and certified. Again, on February 6th, the inspector followed up on the 60-day repair notice tag and noticed that the scale still had not been repaired and it was still being used commercially. The 60-day temporary variance provided by the repair notice tag expired on January 9th, 2023. So they continued to work with the company and says, you need to get this certified and to be in compliance. And I'm happy to note that a follow-up was done, and on March 24th, we were confirmed that they are in compliance. Because of these violations, on February 23rd, a consent agreement was started and worked between the Public Service Commission advocacy staff and the company. And looking at, in summary to look at it, we know there was a violence that they were using the inappropriate scale. They ordered the new scale. There was a delay. They still used the scale. Then when they got the appropriate scale in, it needed to be calibrated. And they recognized their fault or their noncompliance regarding to state law. And in negotiation, an agreement was reached, and Shalom is assessed a civil penalty of $300 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 days of service of this order. They are in compliant. They understand what part of the codes they were in violation of. They tried to remedy it. Some things were not in favor of them, but they recognized that, and I believe the staff did a very good job in following up and going through the rules and procedures and education. So Shalom is assessed a civil penalty of $300 payable to the Public Service Commission upon issuing of this order, and I support the consent agreement.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I also want to applaud staff for the diligence and kind of following up on this. One quick question, is this a grocery store, or what type of a business was this?
It's a very small meat market.
Oh.
International.
International meat market, or just market in general? International market.
Products. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, international market.
Smaller than this room? Or about?
Smaller than your office.
Yep. Okay. So, knowing that's small businesses, dealing in a niche market, I understand that it took a little extra for compliance. I really think it's great that they staff kept on it, though, because scales that aren't measuring accurately obviously can cost a lot of money to consumers, and so getting it into compliance and helping them understand that what the rules are is really beneficial long-term to all the customers. And I think it's a great example of a part of the agency that doesn't get a lot of attention all that often are weights and measures, and the important but somewhat unseen work that you and all your staff do, Conrad. So, great job.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That ends my portfolio.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
All righty. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission assess an application fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Denbury Green Pipeline North Dakota LLC transfer certificate number 215 and permit number 225, citing application case number PU-23-77.
Second.
So on, let's see. We first permitted Denbury Green Pipeline and Denbury Green Montana for the construction, operation, and maintenance of a 9.23-mile, 12-inch quarter CO2 line in November of 2021. And then we amended that permit that was in November of 2020. The first permit was issued in April of 2020, sorry. We amended it in November of 2021 to authorize the addition of 5 workspaces that were outside the designated corridor. And then in February of this year, the Denbury Green Pipeline ND and Denbury Green Pipeline Montana filed an application to transfer the certificate and route permit to issued to Denbury Green North Dakota and Denbury Green Montana, just to Denbury Green Montana. And so that's what this case is all about, the transfer of the certificate and corridor. And any comments or requests for a hearing on this issue should be received by May 12th of this year, and if deemed appropriate, we can make a determination on this matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. I move the commission deem the application for amendment complete and issue a notice of filing and notice of opportunity for hearing and Otter Tail Power Company amended Langdon Wind upgrade, citing application case number PU-23-86.
Second.
So this is an application for repowering of the Langdon Wind Energy Center in Cavalier, North Dakota. It was originally developed by Langdon Wind LLC, and it was transferred in ownership to Otter Tail Power. So Otter Tail Power is now proposing to repower this facility, existing 27 towers that have one with 1.5 megawatt GE77 meter blades, hubs, and gearboxes, with upgraded 1.5 megawatt GE97 meter blades, hubs, and gearboxes. So they want to repower this facility. Again, this is something that we want to hear from the public if they have any Concerns and comments or requests for a hearing must be received by May 12th of 2023, and if deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine this as well without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I just want to make one additional comment, Mr. Chairman, if I may, that I want to applaud the PUD staff for their work in getting through cases in a timely manner. Both of those applications of mine were received less than a month ago and already on the agenda, so I think that's great, and I know they're working hard. They have a ton of work to do, and in addition to the legislative session. So really appreciate that we're staying on top of things and moving applications in a timely manner.
Good, very good, valid point. A few announcements, and the Otter Tail thing tomorrow is postponed, right? Okay, so I'm not going to make that announcement. next Wednesday, though, at noon and then again at 5, we will hold public input sessions on MDU's electric rate increase. That's case PU-22-194. And so that is an opportunity for people who are not a part of the case or even interveners to give us their feedback. And we welcome it and appreciate it. There's been, in the rate cases I've been involved with now in my time here, there have been a number of times where things that we heard in the public input session ended up being points of discussion, of very serious discussion in the rate case. So those are next Wednesday, again at noon and at 5. Then on Tuesday, April 11th, I want to point out, is the next of the formal hearings on the SCS Carbon Transport Midwest Carbon Express CO2 pipeline. That is case number PU-22-391. That next one, the third in the series, will be in Wahpeton. And that will start at 9 a.m. And then the next day on April 12th is our next regular commission meeting at the normal time at 10 o'clock. That concludes the announcements that I think are important to be mentioned orally. With that, this meeting is recessed.